there is a hierarchy in the kitchen. There has to be. There has to be with anything. Someone has to be at the helm of this thing and lead it. But mutual respect and that kind of thing is changing. And I love that.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Sip with Nikki. I'm Nikki Lamberti here in Sonoma County, California, and it has been a few weeks. So if you're a regular listener and you've wondered where I was, thank you for your patience. It has been a roller coaster. You may know that throughout the year I've been battling breast cancer, and then in the middle of my own treatments, my father was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And he passed away on August 30th. So last week I was back home in New Jersey for his celebration of life. So I feel a little rusty sitting in front of this microphone, not so much because I forgot how to do this, but because it was hard for me to sit back down in front of this microphone and talk about joy. And I needed some time to mourn and to heal and to be with family. But I'm here and I'm back. And I missed sitting behind this microphone. And last weekend, when I was home for my dad's services, I saw an old friend, Chef Missy Walnock, who was one of our very first guests on the podcast a year and a half ago. Talk about joy. She has one of my most favorite laughs on the planet. And we were talking about how it's going for her as the assistant dean at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. And we were talking about the fact that they just filmed an awesome series there. Have you seen Next Gen Chef on Netflix yet? Oh my gosh, it's so good. Chef Missy got to be a part of the filming and actually has a very cool appearance in episode 6. I'm going to call it hashtag no crumbs on the counter. And in talking with her about what it was like to be a part of that and letting her know that I was already binge watching it, I thought, you know, there's a lot of new listeners since that episode came out on the podcast. And so if you missed it, I wanted to bring it back to the top of the catalog so you can hear Chef Melissa in all her glory. We grew up together in the same hometown, and I followed her journey from attending culinary school at the CIA to then becoming part of the faculty in pastry, and like I said, now assistant dean. But in between being a student there and becoming faculty there, she has worked with some of the most amazing chefs on the planet, from Thomas Keller at French Laundry to Jean Georges. She's worked in restaurants like Tabla in New York City and Nicholas in Red Bank, New Jersey, and has an amazing resume, but more importantly, has an amazing personality and is just a great human being. So what you'll hear us talk about is, first of all, how someone diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic in childhood went on to become a pastry chef. That's an interesting story. We talk about what it's like to be a woman in the culinary world and how it's changed in the last couple decades and some of her experiences. And then I get her take on the bear, because anyone I know in the culinary world, I need to know what they think of The Bear on Hulu. I love it. Michael loves it. We binge it as soon as the new seasons come out, but I was curious what she thought. So check out Next Gen Chef on Netflix. There are 8 episodes. I'm already done, and I'm about to start rewatching. It's probably one of the best culinary reality shows that I've seen, and I watched them all. And without giving too much away, I was very happy with the outcome. And I have no affiliation with this show. I'm just a fan, and I'm a really big fan of Chef Melissa Walnock. So here we go with Chef Missy. Oh my goodness. Chef Melissa Walnock, aka Missy from childhood. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. First time podcaster, so this is fun.
Well, podcast. Your first time podcast. It's fun. Yes. It's easy. We're just catching up. Don't be scared. in the intro for this, I have shared with our listeners your lineup and your credentials and where you worked and Tabla and John George and French Laundry and all of that. So they know a little bit about that. But what I'd like to do is let's go back to Mattawan, where we are both born and raised in Monmouth County, New Jersey. This is so funny because people are going to be like, does she only interview people from her hometown? Because it's Dan Richer, Chef Dan was on, and I think he was your neighbor, right?
Like literally right around the corner. Yep.
So you grow up same place as me. You're a couple years younger. Tell me when the culinary slash pastry bug first bit, and we'll go from there.
I wish I had. I say this all the time when people ask me like how I got started in this, and I wish I had a better story. Like, oh, I grew up baking with my grandmother, and I did used to cook. My dad's mom was awesome. We used to make pierogies by the hundreds. We did some things here and there. There's no like necessarily aha moment for this, but I had two older brothers, and going through high school, I'm the only girl, but I was still like, oh, you're Matt's sister, you're Mark's sister. And sometimes they would just call me that by accident. And I'm like, okay. So my oldest brother, computer geek, my other brother, amazing artist, does his thing. So I just wanted to do something that wasn't that. So I had my own path and I don't sit still very well. I wanted to be able to travel and do whatever I wanted to do. I like the odd hours of things. I like being creative, but I'm not like an artist painting, drawing. That wasn't my thing, but I like being creative. Food has always been in my life. I'm type 1 diabetic when I was 10. So like food was always in my face of how much, what are you eating? What combination of things? So food was always big for me. And I was like, hey, let's give this a try. And I got a job at, I hope you remember this place in the Atlantic Highlands, the Clam Hut. It's a restaurant.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Mr. Masello from Mattawan High School worked at the Clam Hut.
My best friend
Shout out to Masello.
Yeah. My best friend Jen Black growing up. That's her uncle. And I couldn't get a job anywhere because everybody's like, you don't have experience. And I'm like, how do I get experience if I can't get a job? And he happened to get me a job in the kitchen.
The whole chicken.
Yep. So yeah, I think when I was 16, I started working summers there. And that was my first intro to kitchens. And I just loved it. I love the energy. I love being in the chaos. And you got to organize it and bring it all together and push through. I loved it. And no matter who you're with, you all have to work as a team.
We love that restaurant. Yeah. So it was like a big family outing. Let's go to the Clam Hut. So when you started there, were you in the kitchen or were you on the floor, front of house, back of the house?
Kitchen.
How did that work?
Kitchen. I've never voluntarily
done anything. And that's what you wanted.
Yes. I've never done anything voluntarily in the front of the house ever.
Because you're so shy and don't like people?
Yeah. I think there's no like filter is my problem. That and my kudos to anyone who can walk up to a table, take an order and get it right. I could never. Everything would be a mess. But yeah. So I definitely stayed in the kitchen.
But yet a recipe that has 97 ingredients that must be at the perfect time and temperature.
Not a problem.
You can execute all of that.
Not a problem.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Different part of the brain, I guess. All right. So you're working at the Clam Hut in the kitchen. How long are you there for? And then what happens next?
I did 2 summers there. And once I realized, wow, this is really fun, I started looking for culinary schools. I was like, okay, let's figure this out. And I'm not just saying this because it's full circle and I work there now, but the culinary has been well-known, world-renowned, top dog for a very long time. So I just wanted to go there. And my initial plan was to go get my associates and start working. But I made a deal with my parents that if I was going to do this, because at the time, this was really before Food Network and like a career and where being a chef was like, oh my God, so cool, mysterious, whatever. And everybody's
like, give me a year range. We're talking
so
like
I graduated.
Late 90s
here. Yeah. I graduated high school in 98. So it was that my senior year that I really zeroed in on this. And my parents were like, can you make a living doing this? It just sounds really hard for a woman. And I'm like, sure. We were back and forth about it. And I said, if I stay to get my bachelor's, can we just see what happens with this? So I ended up doing what's technically a 4-year degree, but the culinary, if anybody's aware of the schedule, it just never stops. We go year round for the most part. We get a couple weeks off in August and that's it. There's no stopping. So I was able to get a bachelor's degree in just over 3.5 years. And that was that. But I went, I visited the campus and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And it's just everyone's walking around in chef whites and toques and doing their thing. And I love the fact you went and you did what you wanted to do. Like everything, you chose either culinary or pastry. And that's what you did every day, every class, even your math class, your product ID, any sciences that we took, it all surrounded food. And it was pretty cool. Even you have to get a bachelor's degree. You take a foreign language. You have to do certain things. But even our world history was very centrally focused on food culture and things like that. So it held your interest. Short of accounting classes, I loved everything. It was very educational. They send you out on an externship during your associate's program. So that's like your first year and a half you're there is your associates. And they send you out for about 18 weeks to just make sure that this is what you want to do. And sometimes kids just stay out there and work, and sometimes they come back.
Yep.
And I just chose to go down to the Breakers. I've never worked at a hotel before, so I wanted to see what that was like. And my externship was over the summer, so I was like, all right, let's do a beach. And beautiful place to be. And
that's in Palm Beach.
Yes. Yeah, like the island, Palm Beach Island. So it was like, I'm the only one driving a Volkswagen Jetta around Palm Beach. And I remember like distinctly getting out of my car and locking the door. I'm like, who cares? No one's going to take my car. This doesn't matter. But yeah, I live there. I used to.
What were they all driving there everything in 1999?
Everything I still could not afford. Mercedes, BMW, anything but what I had. And so I used to just walk to work. It was a dream. I walked 2 blocks to the beach on my days off, and I walked to work every other day, and I got to see a lot of things. We did, I don't know if anybody knows the Breakers, aware of the Breakers, but it's massive. It has a lot of history to it. We used to do banquets, a lot of political banquets, things like that, for 5,000 people, 6,000 people at a time. And there's 3 or 4 of those going on within 24 hours. It was a high production facility. Would I want to work in that again? No, but it was a great experience. And it really got my mind organized for this business, because if you missed one thing, mm-hmm. it's like a domino effect. You know, if you forget to make these few cakes, it's like you're set back hours, and forget it. Like everything's knocked off course for the weekend. So it was an intense job, especially for somebody. I didn't know how to really do anything. I went to culinary school with, other than working the line at the clam hut, I baked at home. I didn't know what I was doing. I went to school because I really wanted some background in this and not just go out in industry and really get my ass kicked. I went into that not knowing anything, and I learned a lot while I was there.
What made you pick so early on? You said you either go culinary or you go pastry, right? What made you choose what you did, pastry?
I think it's my personality piece. Like, I've definitely calmed down with my OCD since having kids. It's just impossible. I'd be up 24 hours a day just trying to clean everything. But I have an OCD brain, but I also like to be very creative. And this just brought those two things together. And, you know, everything's scaled, especially in pastry. Everything's down to the gram when you're making a recipe. And at the same time, putting something on a plate or experimenting with flavors, you have such freedom with colors, flavors, textures, all of that stuff, which I love. And I also think it's really pretty cool that, when I always joke around, because like chefs are like, oh, pastry, no big deal. There's chickens out there. There's cows out there. Like, your stuff's already there. Like, when we make a bread or a cake, that was not in existence an hour ago. And I just find that so fascinating that we created something brand new by just putting the right things together.
From the absence of anything, from nothing.
You can't grow a cake.
Oh, I love that. I love that concept. Yeah. I've never really thought about it in that way, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's chickens out there. There's cows out there.
What are you, salt and pepper? I'm throwing them in a pan.
Ingredients already there.
Get out of here. Yeah, you got everything you need already. You just season it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to actually two different things that you said mm-hmm. just now. And the first one was, you said type 1 diabetic since 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there's a lot that goes along with that in life in general, but then put on top of it that what you've chosen to do in your life, it focuses around sugar. So talk to me a little bit about that, and how much of an obstacle or not has that been?
It's interesting, because I don't know where to start with this. As far as being 10 years old and having this kind of dropped in your lap, just a little background on type 1 diabetes, you're born with it. It's different than type 2. It's different scenario. So it was already in my system at birth, and it's usually something either super stressful or another illness that are just flick that switch and like your symptoms start setting in. So when I was 10, I want to say it was my grandfather, I think, who had passed away. And then at the same time, I got this awful bout of strep throat. And strep throat, for anyone with an autoimmune, knows a lot of times it starts with that for some reason. So I just got very sick very quickly. I lost about 15 pounds within 2 weeks. I was exhausted. I wasn't eating, like just a mess. And my mom has worked in the medical field. She's been a nurse for decades.
She's a nurse. Yeah, I remember that.
And I think part of her didn't want to see it because she didn't want to think this is what was happening. And it was like a dentist appointment or something. And my mom was with me. And there's this, when you're in ketoacidosis, meaning that your blood sugar is super high, you get this weird fruity breath. And my mom just leaned over to say something to me. I replied, and I just remember her face, and she just looked at me. And I was in the ER that night, and my blood sugar was, I don't know, a little over 600, I think. And normal, I think at this point, normal is 80 to 100. That's it. They're really tightening the parameters on it. Yeah, I found out I was diabetic. And it was very funny because I just wanted to get out of the hospital. So I was like, what do I need to do? And they're like, you need to give yourself shots. And I was like, show me. And boom, we were out. Like, they got my blood sugar under control. I got quick training with a nutritionist. And I had a juvenile endocrinologist at that point. And I was able to go home. But everything in my house changed, because it was very different also the way you kept your diet decades ago versus how you work it now, which is really carb counting is the main focus of how to handle type 1 diabetes. But yeah, everything changed. We had scales everywhere. It was like skim milk and low fat this and da da da, which again, completely different mentality now. But my days were just very focused around food. And I know just looking back at it now and being a parent now, how stressful it was for my parents, regardless of my mom's medical background. It's still scary. You don't know what's the school day going to bring. Are you going to get low and not feel it? And sometimes that happens. And so food was in my face for a very long time. And to say that hasn't mentally impacted me would be a lie. Like, I definitely have some things surrounding food, which is very typical also with diabetics. How could it not be? It's like you have to think about everything all the time, every day. And no matter...
Oh my God, I think about food all the time, every day. Me What's too. My excuse? Frankly, I don't have type 1 diabetes. As it's I'm in eating, my face, my choice.
Exactly. As I'm eating breakfast, I'm like, what's for lunch? It's that mentality. What am I in the mood for? Yeah. It's just I have to figure out, okay, what do I do in between that? And I kid you not, like if I'm going to go out for a tasting menu, which we do, I love it. Give me 12 courses. Give me wine. Give me whatever. Like I have to think about that all day. I don't want to eat a more carb-loaded breakfast. I want to save this all. And I want to make sure that I go for a big walk before I go out to dinner just so my body's moving, my metabolism's moving, and it'll help keep my blood sugar low. It's like that kind of thought that goes into it, which also at the same time is the thought that has to go into my daily life in a kitchen, in all honesty. So there's connections right there. But I find it interesting that I chose pastry. I think it seems natural to do something in food just because it's such a part of your life. It's okay, let's really get my hands in this and do more with it. But I can't say that I make things with replacement sugars. That's never been my thing. I don't find them overly healthy. Not that they're sugar alcohols. They're not going to kill you unless you like that's of it. But it really causes digestive issues. Anybody who's had sorbitol, sugar-free, whatever, those things will mess with your digestion. And so I try to avoid it. And it's more about just balance of what you're eating. So like I'll have guests come into a restaurant and say, oh, I'm a diabetic, I'll just have sorbet. And I'm like, no. It's like sugar on sugar. Food has sugar. Then you're adding sugar. So it's more, honestly, it'd be better with a small scoop of ice cream or a piece of cheesecake where you have that fat that kind of slows that sugar down that, to get into your system. But we have this event every year on campus and it's called Menus of Change. And it's really, where do we go to make things more healthful for people? And how do we just work it into an everyday system in restaurants and bakeries and cafes that it's not, oh, this is sugar-free and this is what everybody else is going to eat. Or this is gluten-free, this is what everybody else is going to eat. And I had a great opportunity to speak at the conference this year and do a demo. And it was really cool for me as a diabetic, too, to realize that you don't necessarily need all these replacement sugars. And if you, like I made a chocolate mousse cake and the chocolate cake had used black beans in it. And that's a great source of protein. Yes, carbs, but protein. And I use a monk fruit sugar that has zero calories and it's not a sugar alcohol and very little added can sweeten something just enough that you couldn't tell. I made, for the guests, I made an original recipe of everything and then I made a high protein, lower sugar version of it. And side by side, you couldn't tell that there was even really a difference.
Really? Yes.
And it was just all ingredient choice. And I think that's something great that somebody in my position can offer. Not that anybody couldn't do it, but there's a little bit of a different kind of passion behind it just because it's like, oh, I can do this and help others help me and vice versa. And to just be able to streamline it into, you know, your everyday and just put it on a menu without having to mark it as something that is low sugar. Nobody's going to know, just let it be. And it is healthier. And we can change course now and get some of these sugar, your brain processes it like a drug, you know? So it's if we can pull back on that and just naturally make things healthier without sparing taste or flavor or any of that'd be great.
Here's what I just took away from what you just shared. Knowing you since childhood and knowing you through family and my sister and hearing what you were doing, I feel like it was always like, oh my God, have you heard about Missy? She's going to culinary school. And remember, she's diabetic. And can you believe, like, she's a pastry chef and she's diabetic. And it was like, it was spoken about like it was this like irony. And now when I hear it, I'm like, no, it actually makes total sense. I don't necessarily want to say it's why, but I feel like because it was such a big focus and part of your life and something that you had to think about all the time, it actually makes a ton of sense that is the direction.
Yeah. Yep. There's anybody who does this for a living. You have to have a passion for what you do. It's low pay. It's hard work. No one's patting you on the back and saying, great job, unless you're a Thomas Keller. You know what I mean? You have to have a passion for what you do. But on top of it, there's that opportunity to use my personal life and what I've gone through and whatever and share that with other people and let other people out there who may not be in the profession or as aware of food that's out there that you can use or make that is just normal.
Now you're teaching. Not only are you from lecturing professor to associate dean in your recent promotion. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So now you are teaching others, and you were talking about that, right? The passion to share with others and teach others. Mm-hmm. You could have continued in kitchens. You worked in a lot of really fantastic places with really famous chefs. You mentioned TK, Thomas Keller, a moment ago, and Jean George, and Danny Myers.
Yeah, it was Union Square Cafe and Tabla were both Danny Myers restaurants. Yeah.
Just as a foodie nerd like me, like someone who watches Chef's Table and Masterclass and lives on the other side of the mountain from Yountville, like when some of these names, I'm just like, ah, it's so cool. So why choose then to take the education option and start teaching?
It was a little bit of my personal dribbled over into my professional. And I think at some point or another, I was like, I am going to teach because, again, anybody who's done kitchen work at any level, really, it takes a toll on you. Your sleep patterns, your physical body, like it's a lot. So I said, eventually I will get back to the CIA and I'll teach. It just seems a logical thing, a great place to retire. And at that point in time, I was living in the city and working at Tabla. I switched over to work at Restaurant Nicholas, and any Monmouth County, New Jersey person knows Nicholas. That place was amazing. And I was very fortunate. It was like 15 minutes from where I was living at the time. But again, same hours and you're working. And I think Taylor turned 3 and he looked at me and was like, I miss you. You know, and I'm like, no, you're right. Like, I'm not home for anything. As much as I love what I do, I have a family now. And at that point, I met my now husband at Nicholas, which was pretty awesome. So a lot of things were happening. And
you met Anthony at Nicholas?
Yes. We were perfect for each other because he loves desserts and I love drinks. So he was the bar manager there. And we ended up all, it was just everybody just hanging out. And we were friends first for quite some time. And then something just clicked and hey. So all of this was going on. And then Taylor was young and I was barely seeing him. So I said, all right, let me put my application at the culinary. They were searching. So I got the phone call. I did an interview. They had me back up for the practical, which was probably the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done in my life. And I ended up getting the job there. What was awesome is that they hired me to be a pastry chef in the restaurants and to teach students how to do pastry in a restaurant environment. I wrote the curriculum for the class. We started it up. So I got my 5-day-a-week schedule. I have time off for Christmas. I have time off for the holidays. I'm off in the summer, but I'm still in a restaurant. I'm still able to be creative and I'm teaching our next generation. It's like, what's the loss there? So, oh, and health insurance and stuff like that. So that's great. So,
because that's important.
Yeah, all those little bonuses. So, yeah.
Can you tell me about the practical as part of that interview? Do you remember what you had to do?
Do I remember? I will never forget. I will never forget. Like, this whole job is pressure. Like, you can plan as much as you want to, but you don't know what you're walking into. And it could be in the middle of service. I love being weeded. I love the chaos, whatever. Going in for this practical, my hands were like literally shaking. So the way it's set up, and it's funny because I'm now on the search committee to hire new faculty for pastry. So we revise this and go through it, make sure the practical keeps making sense. And you get basically 2.5 days to get this done. You come up to campus. So I had 2 laminated items. So I ended up doing a laminated brioche and croissant. We had 2 entremets. And if anybody's aware of an entremet, it's like a French-inspired, very delicate cake, but it's like a mousse cake. So they're all the layers are very thin and there's usually 4 to 5 different pieces to it. It gets that beautiful shiny glaze that was such a thing on Instagram for so long. That's an entremet. It's not like a layered cake with frosting on it. Just to build an entremet, there's probably 6 to 7 different recipes that you need plus garnish. So that one thing alone is big. So we have 24 croissant, 24 laminated brioche, 2 entremets, 12 petit gâteaux.
Laminated. Tell me. Laminated, so, break that down for me.
That's like puff pastry, things like that, where you have your dough and you lock in your butter, you roll it out, do your folds, roll it out, do your folds while taking breaks in between so you're not overworking that gluten. There's a lot of science to that too. So laminating dough is that delicious, buttery, flaky, fatty goodness, and you can make a variety of things out of it.
That's a new term for me. Thank you.
Yeah,
I just learned that. Thank you.
Lamination.
I knew you were not putting it in a plastic machine between pages. Like that much I knew, but that's my deck here.
Yeah, lamination.
Layers and layers of gel. Buttery goodness. Yeah.
That's a better way to describe it. Yeah, I think depending on how you do your folds, you'll end up with 1,000 different layers. So that's where the term milfoy comes through and things like that. So
mil being 1,000.
Croissants, laminated brioche, 2 entremets, 12 petit gâteaux, which are individual portions based off of your entremet, 2 petit fours. So I did 24 bonbons, so molded chocolates. happen.
Do you know this ahead of time going in?
They give you the categories, not what to do with it. They're just like, you have to make this many things. So you get a day and a half to prep all that out, like a 7 to 5, come in the next day, and then 7 to 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock you present, and then you get the afternoon to, I don't know, go cry in a corner or whatever I ended up doing. And then
are they watching your work, or you're just presenting the finished product?
People are in and out all day long, because it's what's your organizational process? Do you work clean? What's your waste? Like, you have to keep an eye on all of that. And then the third day, you teach a class, basically. So you're in front of students and you do a 30-minute lecture and demo. And it was...
Did you love that part? I feel like that's just you.
That was the scariest part for me.
I like that. Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what's weird is that, like, I can act a fool in a room any day of the week. I don't care. But when everyone's silent and staring at me, like walking down the aisle for my wedding, terrifying. I'm like, why is everyone just like that focus? I don't like it. I don't like it. But it's not like I'm worried about embarrassing myself in real life. I don't really care about much of anything, but that it's hard. Plus, it's interesting being pulled right out of industry and then teaching. You don't think about all of the little nuances of, okay, now I'm gonna add my baking soda, and a hand goes up, what's baking soda? And I'm like, son of a like, I haven't had to break this down scientifically in God knows how long. It's just like, this is what we're doing. So there's a difference there. It's all in depth, and as a teacher, you don't know really what these kids are coming in with. By the time they get to the end of the program, you have an idea of, because I've taught on both ends. I've taught the first class and I've taught the last class of the associates programs. By the time they get to the end, you have an idea, but the in-between, it's okay, have you tempered chocolate? Do you know what tempering chocolate even means? Do you know what baking powder is? And there's so much to really break down scientifically for everyone. So that's the part I had to think about as I was doing it, and just being able to work and keep eye contact and engaging a crowd. It's an art all unto itself.
Oh, absolutely. It's a totally different skill set that you're layering on top of what you're actually doing. That you're laminating on top of what you're
exactly.
actually
doing. Full circle.
Can I not use those words interchangeably?
You can.
That's not right.
We will be right back.
I had the most healthy and delicious lunch the other day. It was a salmon patty over a bed of spinach, and it was loaded with omega-3 and fatty acids. I was so proud of myself. And this beautiful fish came from Sina C. In episode 69, you heard my awesome conversation with Sina Wheeler. She is from a fifth-generation fishing family, and she and her husband, Rich, founded Sina C, where he catches wild, sustainably caught fish in Alaska, and then they cut it and package it and ship it beautifully right to your door, and it arrives premium sushi-grade quality with a special recipe card on what to do with it. Well, now that it's summer, that means everything is in season right now, from their specialty sockeye salmon to halibut, cod, crab cakes, which is my mom's favorite. They're a small family-owned business, and they've been kind enough to create a discount code for our listeners. The code is SIPNC, S-I-P and S-E-A, SIPNC, and you can use that at their website, SinaC.com. SinaC is S-E-N-A-S-E-A.com, and you can get 10% off your order with that coupon code. This can be for a one-time purchase, or also popular is their subscription box that you can create or let them curate for you. Their website is loaded with grilling recipes, which are great for summer, and lots of inspirations of what to do with all of this beautiful fish that they will send right to your doorstep. I encourage you to sign up for their mailing list, because they do a monthly drawing for a $50 gift card every month. So check out their delicious fish at SinaC.com. Healthy fish delivered easy. In episode 78, you heard Liz from American Olive Farmer share her basil, lemon, and garlic olive oils with me. And then in episode 83, Pairing Night with Dr. Hobie, you heard us blow our friends' minds when they tasted them, as well as her balsamic vinegar and olio novello. Well, Liz and her husband Donald operate American Olive Farmer, which is here in California, and they are some of the most delicious olive oils and vinegars I have ever put in my mouth. They are superlative extra virgin olive oils, 100% grown, milled, and bottled here in California. And you can purchase a variety of different oils depending on the time of year. But right now, those three flavored oils are hot, and you can buy them in a bundle of all three and save. Serve them for dipping alongside your charcuterie board or drizzled over your pizza, which is my favorite thing to do. You can set up a subscription for savings and have all of their beautiful products shipped right to your door. So check out American Olive Farmer, not only for oils and vinegars, but beautiful accessories and gifts. Liz and Donald have been kind enough as our sponsor to create a discount code for listeners. So use the code SIPWITHNIKKI at checkout, capital S, capital W, capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, and they will give you 10% off your order. Go check it out. You're welcome. And now, back to the show.
I used to live over in Gardner up until about 4 or 5 months ago, and there is this beautiful B&B right around the corner from where I used to live. And through a third-party connection, I started doing classes there. So I do now. We're up to anywhere between 1 to 4 classes a month at the Watergrass Hill B&B. So you can look that up if anybody's in the area. And
can I come and be in
your
class?
You can absolutely come and be in the class. It's really fun. I love it. And the kitchen that the owner put onto this space is, every time I walk into it, I'm like, oh, it's like a postcard. It's just stunning. And you're totally in the country. And it's just so, it's beautiful. Every year we do a pies and tarts for Thanksgiving, usually chocolates around Valentine's Day. And we...
Are they just like a single standalone class where you can go to one, mm-hmm. or is it a series of multiple weeks?
Just one. And about 2.5 hours, we do everything. So I'll demo everything. Some of it's hands-on. You usually make 3 different things. I try to do that so everybody can see a wide range of a technique I'm trying to teach. And you go home with everything.
So if people want to look at the schedule and sign up to bake with you, mm-hmm. where do they find that class info?
On watergrasshillbnb.com and look under workshops.
How fun. I'm going to put the link in the show notes for those of you listening so you can find this. And if you want to see some gorgeous pastry porn, yes, I said it, follow Melissa at Chef Walnock, WALNOCK on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous. We need some wine. Do you think it's time for some wine?
Yeah.
Sip Spotlight.
Okay. When you and I were prepping to do this recording today, and I told you, oh, we pick a wine and I'll send it to you and we're going to sip the same wine. Do you have any preferences? Do you remember what you said?
I think I preferred white, crisp, not sweet, and a little acidic, fruity.
That's exactly what you said. And first of all, that told me a couple things. That gave me direction on what to pick, but that also gave me direction that this girl knows wine, just like the language, right? The language that we use when we talk about wine.
I do love to enjoy wine. And the funny thing about alcohol, and it's more vodka and liquor more than wine, but alcohol actually lowers your blood sugar. So you do have to be careful when you're drinking, but not for the reason that you would normally think. So,
because it lowers it.
Yes.
Because of the alcohol.
Yeah.
Because a wine like this that we are going to taste today, there's no sugar in this glass. Mm-hmm. There's alcohol. There's calories from alcohol, right? But there is no glucose, fructose. That has all been converted into this beautiful alcohol that is in this bottle through the magic of fermentation, which is now my world. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but we have CIA Culinary Institute in common. Do you know that I did the wine program at the Culinary Institute here in St. Helena?
I did. Amanda told me that. She told me you were going. I think that's awesome. That campus is stunning, too.
We call it Hogwarts. It looks like a big castle, Hogwarts. Yeah. So you said a crisp, nice acidity white. So I started to think about what do we do? And I don't even know why my brain went to Greece. Maybe because Michael and I had just watched Big Fat Greek Wedding 3 a couple of weeks ago, one of my favorite movies, the original one.
Yeah.
And we're also planning a cruise in June for my dad, Big Dom's 80th birthday.
Oh my God.
And we're going out of Rome and we're going to Greece, which we've never been.
That's amazing.
So we're going to Crete and we're going to Athens and we're going to Mykonos. So I just have had Greek culture on the brain. And so I said, oh, let's do a syrtiko. That is a lesser known white grape from Greece. And you've got, and I've got this beautiful 2022. I'm going to say, actually, you married a Greek. Anthony's Greek, right?
Yes, he is. Yep. Half Greek, half Sicilian.
He's Greek.
He's got a very big personality. I love I don't know. It's like one of those things that just was meant to be this today. He lost his dad like a year ago, or no, almost 2 actually at this point. And our goal at this point, they've been to Greece. His family's been to Greece, but I never have been. So we all want to do like just a return trip at some point, because he literally from Greece came over here when he was, I want to say between 16 and 18 years old, and never went back. He loved America. He stayed, and it was very cool to get to know him and in the background and food in general. It's so universal and it brings people together. And I had never really dabbled in Greek desserts, but I made him a galaktoboutiko. And it's like a citrus.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the nicest way I could say it with him.
Say it again, please.
All the Greeks who may be listening to this are like, nope. But galaktoboutiko.
Lean into the mic.
Nice and slow. But
I love it.
Yeah, it's like a polenta-ish custard with citrus in it and phyllo. And I just remember he was also a diabetic, hilarious. And there was honey, everything in it. But he had the whole thing sitting in his lap. And he and I were just sitting on the front porch of his house. And he ended up devouring the whole thing. And we were like, talk about getting in with the in-laws. We were good after that. And we just always...
You closed him.
That's it. That's
you closed
it.
Him with yeah. the Galapagos.
That's it. Nailed it. Yep.
That's like the producer of this wine is Domain Papagiannakos.
There you go.
I think I said that okay. I did a little research. Papagiannakos.
Oh, yeah. Look at that on the bottle.
The grape is Syrtiko. Let's get it in the glass if you haven't already, because I like to do the pouring noise.
I didn't want
you have yours in your glass.
Mine's in my glass. I wanted to hush during that pour. It's lovely.
You hush. I know it's hard for us to hush. Are you familiar with this grape? Have you had a Syrtiko before?
I have not. And I have to be very honest with you. I know which wines I like and I don't like. This is probably the second, maybe third Greek wine I've ever had. I don't go fully in depth with wine. Like I said, I love drinking wine. I know what I like. And I know a little bit of what pairs with food. Totally my husband's thing. He has his level one some. At this point and wants to continue. I know. Yay. Loves wine. And I laugh all the time because with food, I can taste. Like, I'm like, oh, there's a little green cardamom on the back end of this and whatever it may be. And he'll drink wine and he's, oh, it's like toasted almonds and this, that, and the other. I'm like, yep, it's white.
I can't taste green cardamom on the back of something. Yeah. Anything.
I don't know.
It's training, and it's training your nose and your palate, and then having the recall and the reference points when someone says hints of lemon zest in a wine. That's going to be a little different than what true lemon zest on a cannoli is going to be like, right?
That's true.
So,
this looks lovely. It's nice and clear. It's not, I don't know. I'm trying to look at, the legs aren't too thick, right? So it's not too much sugar. No. Am I right in that?
The kind of runny legs, which doesn't sound great, but the fact that these teardrops and legs are not crawling down the side of the glass tells us, most importantly, that it's a lower alcohol wine. It's a lighter body. It's going to feel less viscous in our mouth, and it's a lower alcohol wine because it's 13%, which, thinking about most of the wines that we drink, especially if you're like me and you drink a lot of California wines, we're talking 14, 15, 16% alcohol. Mm-hmm. So 13 is pretty conservative, which is part of what's going to give you those quicker legs running down the side of the glass. Yeah, the color's really pale, like pale straw. And I know just from doing a little research on this wine for today, this is done all in stainless steel. So this has been in oak, never been in a barrel. And when you age white wine in a barrel, not only does it give oakiness, as most people knows, but it does affect the color. And this was never in oak. So this is truly out of stainless steel.
I think mentally it messes with me too when white wines have that deep yellow color. I'm like, oh, this is just going to be too heavy for me and I'm not going to like it. But
it looks like cat pee.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Too thick. Too thick.
Yeah, so this grape, Syrtiko, is originally from the island of Santorini. These vines that this producer made the Syrtiko from are 50-year-old vines. But here's the cool thing about when they grow in the Greek islands, because these are all volcanic islands and there's a lot of wind on these small islands, when you think of a vineyard, they developed centuries ago this process of how they train the vines really low to the ground instead of like big tall tea like traditional vines that we see. Mm-hmm. They're low to the ground and they start to coil them. So the vine forms a basket, they call it, or a wreath, and it's round. And then the grapes and the fruit are actually on the inside of that.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it protects the fruit from the wind on the islands.
That's pretty awesome.
When I look at the producer's notes for this wine, they talk about sea spray as a note, which is so interesting, just obviously being from that volcanic island region. And then the producer also calls out hints of white tea. That's a very specific note. Here's what I do know about this wine. The feeling of it in the mouth is very fresh. It's very bright, that nice acidity that we talk about. It's delicious. Very clean on the finish, but there is a lingering bitterness on the back end, which almost presents to me like tannin. And normally we know white wine is the grapes are crushed and the juice is skins. Pulled away from the skins right away to go into fermentation. What I did read about this wine and how they make it in stainless steel, they leave the skins in for a bit. So there is some skin contact. Yeah. Now, it didn't really darken the color, but I think it adds that really nice finish where it almost is a very subtle bitterness and lingering, but in a delicious way, which is unique for a white wine. So do you like this wine?
I love it. It's delicious.
So we have just two last things left. I want to go back to something that you said early on when you were talking about deciding to go into culinary in a conversation where you said your parents said something like, are you sure this is what you want to do? It's a lot of hard work and it's hard for a woman.
Yes.
To make it in this business.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me just a little bit about when your parents said that and then how did it work being a woman in the culinary world?
I feel like in industry, it's definitely changed since I started to where we are now. All but one of the pastry chefs that I have worked under, all male. And I see that evolving. And I see that especially what's so funny is, so I take the school as a little bit of a pool because all of these kids are going out into the field. Most of the culinary used to be men. Most of the pastry used to be women. And it's definitely so intermeshed at this point. And what makes me happy is that on our campus, there are now more females on our campus in general enrolled as students than there are males, which I think is awesome because they're not all in the pastry program. So that's very cool to see that there's going to be more at the forefront coming through within the next 10, 15 years. There's going to be some headliners, which is great. But yes, I've had mostly male pastry chefs. I feel that it's switching just because more people are getting involved. I think there's way more exposure to our industry, which I think is great. I think for the past few years, top pastry chefs in the world have been females, which is great. A few years ago was the first one. I think it's our natural personality. And I think men look at things differently than women. And men are like, right here, right now, let's do this. And that's essentially, again, your food's there. You cook it. I'm not diminishing what happens. Trust me.
Chicken is there. The chicken's there.
Cow is you there. Season it. It's a pan. No, just so you're going to get backlash on behalf of me for this. But
I know, right? No.
I don't mean that. Much respect. Trust me. Like being a saucier, just that alone is, it's difficult. But women have this different sense of organization and steps to get somewhere and don't mind the measuring of the little things and all the intricacies that going into pastry entails. And I think there are far more women who do this and are great at it versus the ones you actually hear about. And that's the difference there too. I think men just naturally kind of get the attention for being in the field, which is funny because what's the age-old stereotype is women belong in the kitchen, but not unless it's a profession. I don't know, which cracks me up. So no, we belong.
It
we
is.
Belong
I was
everywhere.
Thinking about that today.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about that. The irony of that, mm-hmm. and I love to hear where you say that it's changing because I feel like it really mirrors the wine world and winemaking mm-hmm. when we talk about the percentage of women that are either owner or winemaker or both, and how it's still low, but how it really has increased in the last 10 to 20 years. So I feel like there's probably some parallels there. But when you think back to when your parents asked you, when you were probably not even 20 years old, are you sure you want to do this? It's going to be hard for a woman. Was it hard? And was it hard because you were a woman or was it just hard because it was hard?
A little bit of both. And it's so funny because that point never really entered my mind. It's just like, I want to do this. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. Like I'm a competitive person in things that I know that I can compete in, but I'm really competitive against myself. It's like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it the best that I can be in. And then if you're going to tell me I can't, I'm going to do it. I'm going to work at it even harder to get to where I want to be. So if anything, it was motivational.
That's why I love you.
Yeah.
That's why I admire you from afar.
Tell me no 15 times. I'm just going to be better at whatever I'm doing. But it's hard work in general. I do feel, again, changing. But when I started, there is definitely like a hierarchy and men just were the thing and we're there and we're working, but it's that same thing. You work twice as hard to get the same kind of recognition and notice and things like that. To say there was no harassment is a lie. Like, of course there's sexual harassment. I could tell tales of that. So that you have to overcome and it's hard. And you read even now the Me Too stories and why would you take it? Why would you say and blah, 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 blah. And it's not so easy. It's not so cut and dry. Like, oh, I was wronged. I'm leaving. I'm moving. I'm not doing this. It's like, you almost want to prove that you can put your foot down and you can make a difference difference in your little world of, I'm not going to take this, but I am going to stay. And I'm just going to make your life really annoying. I'm going to be here every day. I don't care. And I stood up for myself the way I needed to stand up for myself. And whether that was verbally, every once in a while, physically, and it is what it is. I've never worked in a place where I didn't feel safe. Let me lay that out first. I think the people that were my mentors looked out for me 100%. And I just worked my ass off. And I think in the end, that's what matters. I was the first one there, last one to go home. I always worked. And I was the one that was asked to go do events with my chef and to be there. They trusted me. They know I worked. And that's all that mattered, is the work that I put into it. And of course, there's things that could happen, but it could be in any job. It could be walking down the street. You're gonna find this. You have to figure out how to handle it for yourself and what makes you comfortable to show up every day. And I figured that out. We do a lot at school too, to really enforce standing on your own two feet and standing up for yourself. And we need to change the industry. Like, we're at a really great point where things are shifting. And I think COVID, oddly enough, played a role in that. And there's a lot of attention being paid to health insurance, mental health, being a woman in a kitchen. And we hold panels all the time of faculty that work there that talk to the students, Q&As. We bring in female chefs from all over the place to come in and talk to our student body about what they've dealt with, how things have changed, how they would love to see things move forward. And it's very empowering. If something, everybody needs to watch their behavior, and that's the bottom line. You can't do what you used to do and get away with it and feel like we just need to tough it out. It's not that anymore. Mm-hmm. You can talk about it. You're going to find somebody else who can relate to it, and you can hash it out and really bring it to the surface. And I think that's the most important thing.
We're going to finish up with some listener questions.
Mm-hmm. Listener questions.
Someone named Amanda would like to know, if you were not doing what you do, what would you be doing?
I think about this all the time. Definitely something creative, whether it be makeup artist or in fashion or something, a photographer, movies, but behind the scenes with movies, whether that's wardrobe or something along those lines.
The same listener wants to know, did you watch The Bear?
Oh my God, I can't even tell you how much I love this show. It's so fun.
The one that swept like every Emmy out there.
Oh my
God. The Bear.
And so deserved. First of all, and again, my memory is awful. It's like a piece of information goes in, one falls out. But the guy, The Bear, how could you not just want to watch this guy be a chef?
Jeremy.
Right? Oh my God. Calvin Klein? Yeah, thank you for that spread. But the show is probably the closest thing I've seen to a real life kitchen and the pressures of it, and just hands and knees scrubbing floor. People don't know that side. They see the Thomas Kellers and the Danielle and Jean George and this pristine greeting the table and making this beautiful meal, which I think is almost a beautiful thing because it's so quiet and calm and precise in the dining room. And you open that kitchen door and it's like, where's my fucking Sharpie? Get off my line. And it was like one of the best scenes ever because you're like, yes, it's sometimes just shut up, let's go. And everybody from top to bottom is scrubbing the kitchen down and organizing and learning. And there's always ego involved and everybody's got a great idea, but can it be implemented immediately? No. And it's like, how do you tell somebody this isn't probably the best thing you tasted? You have to enhance it without offending. It's such a nuanced thing to be in a kitchen. And just seeing that and how the guy who was doing pastries just got so into fermentation. And I think he had the Noma cookbook. And I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant. And he's just like working on a perfect donut. Yes, long story short, I love The Bear. I had COVID. I was home. I was the only one home. And I'm like, I'm binging the hell out of this thing. I watched the whole first season. It was so good. It's like giving me goosebumps even thinking about it. But what I loved about it too, it shows the changes that are going on where everyone is calling each other chef. And there is a hierarchy in the kitchen. There has to be. There has to be with anything. Someone has to be at the helm of this thing and lead it. But mutual respect and that kind of thing is changing. And I love that. But just the pressures of it. And when they screw up like the online ordering or something and all you hear is that ticket machine, the amount of times that I've woken up with the sound of the ticket machine, I'm like, oh my God, I'm not aware. It's just like, yes, I know that feeling. And they're just lining up. And
they nailed it.
Yeah, it's
they
so good. It. So good. Yes.
Okay. Here's the final listener question. Very complex, intricate question. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite dessert?
I knew it. Everybody always asks, right? Oh, I have to say, when it comes to things, I'm such a basic bitch with the things that I love. There's certain things I'll look at a menu and I'm like, that's what I'm getting. 9 times out of 10, it's a cheesecake. I love cheesecake. Souffle, I will get any day of the week. And a freaking and lava cake, man. I just love, and I hate it that I love them, but I love them. They're just so good. I'm sorry. I'm very basic. Crepes. I have to be careful at home though, because when I start and I love, love, love this, my daughter is just, it's like she has a radar. She's like, is that sugar that I hear happening in the, and she'll come right down. So I usually try to do things that are like a little bit more low key. What I love doing at home now is really cooking more. It's nice. I turn, no one messes with dinner. My husband's usually still at work. My parents are chilling out. So I have the kitchen to myself. I turn on a little music.
The chicken's already there. The cow's already there.
Ready to go. No problem. So I would say 5 out of the 7 days of the week, I'm the one in the kitchen doing dinner and I love it. And like sauces are my thing.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. This was such a special treat. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been lovely. Thank you.
Yay! Cheers with our Papagiannikos Assyrtiko.
I'm not.
Cheers, sister.
Cheers.
So my suspicion that Chef Melissa was going to be a great podcast guest was indeed confirmed, wouldn't you say? Not only her amazing story and her inspirational determination to just keep going and push through, but also just a wonderful, joyful, big personality with a lot in common of many of us of loving food and loving wine. It's just she has made a beautiful career out of creating it and now teaching others how to carry on that legacy. So thank you so much to Chef Melissa. I know that you are a busy gal and this was really special. I hope to have you back because I had a million more questions that we didn't even get to. Please make sure that you are liking, following, rating, and reviewing this podcast. It's nice to get some feedback. And more importantly, those ratings help us to be seen and help more people to listen. And check out Next Gen Chef on Netflix. It's so good. Send me a note, Nikki@tipwithnikki.com, once you know who the winner was, and let me know your thoughts. I wonder if we're on the same page. If you'd like to support the podcast, buy me a glass of wine. You can do that. The link in the show notes. It's basically like leaving a tip, and we would be so grateful. And then finally, follow Chef Melissa on Instagram. She is at Chef Walnock, WALNOCK, for some gorgeous pastry porn. And I hope that you get to maybe sign up for a cooking class with her at the Bed and Breakfast. I will again put the link in the show notes. And if you want to grab this beautiful Greek Assyrtiko that we tasted together, you'll find a link for wine.com, one of my affiliate partners. You can have it shipped right to your door, just like I shipped it to Melissa. Be sure to listen in next week for an all-new interview with Agent Crew from Wine Spies. What the heck is that all about? You'll have to listen in. And whatever you do between now and next week, I hope that you sip well.